In the dawn, upon the narrow, muddy beach beside the reed banks, Hui Ben Ammon greeted his god. Hui wore light hunting armor of leather, a leather breastplate and arm guards over a short linen tunic and bronze-studded leather kilt. But his weapons were laid aside, for he was about to offer the sacrifice, to send a messenger to Great Baal, a messenger to carry the request of Lannan Hyrcanus to his god. The prince and his nobles were gathered in a half-circle about the priest, all of them facing the eastern sky. Baal showed the tip of his fiery orb above the horizon, and they lifted their hands to him, fingers spread in the sun sign. "Great Baal," Hugh called the greeting, in tones that seemed must carry to the sky, "your children greet you." Hui's swarthy, beak-nosed features were lit by a mystic glow which gave him a strange beauty. "We have come to this place to choose a king for your people, and we ask your blessing on our endeavors." Hui knew his gods intimately, and although he loved them, yet he knew their all-too-human weaknesses. They were vain, inconsistent, touchy, greedy, and sometimes bone-lazy. They must be flattered and cajoled, bribed and jollied along. They needed special ceremony and display to capture their jaded interest and attention. Sacrifice, which Hui personally found revolting, to assuage their lust for warm blood. It was not enough that sacrifice was made. It must be made in all the correct forms before the gods would accept it. And as one of his lesser priests led the white bull forward, Hui wondered if he'd done the right thing in persuading Lannan to offer an animal rather than a slave. The gods preferred human blood, but Hui had argued with Lannan that a bull now and the promise of a slave later might be more effective. Hui had no compunction in bargaining with the great immortals, especially if it delayed the moment when he must look into the terrified, pleading eyes of a doomed slave. In the 5 years that Hui had directed the religious life of Opet, not more than 100 human messengers had been sent to the gods. Whereas there had been times in the city's history when that number had been sent at a single ceremony. "We send you a fine white bull to carry our message," Hui turned and approached the animal. It was of the short, stocky Opet type, white and grey dappled, with a fat hump on its shoulders and wide, straight horns. It stood quietly as Hui took the vulture axe from one of his priests. The circle of nobles drew back a little, giving the axe space to swing and the blood to spurt. "Great Baal, receive our messenger," Hui shouted, and the axe went up, reflecting the low rays of the sun from its flashing blade. It hissed angrily as it fell, and the bull's thick neck severed cleanly, the head seeming to leap from the trunk. Headless, the body fell to its knees, and the blood pumped and gushed. Hui leaned upon his weapon in the typical stance of the resting axeman. "A sign, Great Baal," Hui shouted, making it more a demand than a request. "Give your children a sign." And his voice was tiny in the immensity of swamp and sky and water. The timeless silence of the swamps fell upon them, the silence of the ages in the smoky purple dawn. A flight of spur-winged geese passed overhead, wings beating heavily, long necks outstretched, silhouetted darkly against the rosy streamers of sun-touched mist. Hui watched them hopefully, tempted to claim them as god forms. "A sign, Great Baal." He thrust aside the temptation, but his irritation was increasing. The sacrifice had been meticulously performed right down to the single, clean stroke of the axe. Was this to be one of those occasions when the god's attention had wandered, or was he being obstinate, pig-headed? A hippopotamus splashed and snorted out in the bay, and Hui turned towards it expectantly. But the fat, grey sea cow merely fluttered its ears like bees' wings, and then submerged with a swirl. A sign, Great Bale. The third and final request, and almost immediately it was answered. A sound rose from beyond the papyrus beds that startled the water birds into flight, that shook the fluffy white heads of the reeds, that seemed to roll across the heavens like thunder. A sound such as none of them had ever heard before. The roaring of the Grey Lion. Hui's dark scowl vanished beneath a beatific smile, and he turned those long-lashed gazelle eyes on his prince. The gods have answered you, Lannan Hyginus. He was seeing the faces of the priests and the nobles and the warriors and the huntsmen, the superstitious awe with which they gazed at him. He would sacrifice privately to Baal later, nothing ostentatious or expensive, a chicken perhaps, as a gesture of thanks for this magnificent cooperation. It would rank with one of his best performances ever. Hui was so delighted with his success that he could not resist a further histrionic gesture. Go out, Prince of Opet, and take your Grey Lion, said Hui. The little bushman led them along one of the buffalo paths. It was a green tunnel of reeds, the papyrus closing overhead to hide the sky, the damp, peaty earth underfoot, the musty animal swamp smell in their nostrils. They came out at last into the open grassland. Short, bright green grass, cropped down by the countless herds of buffalo that infested this reach of the shore. The bushman turned and led them along the edge of the papyrus beds. They were an unwieldy procession, 400 or 500 strong, for some of the noble nine would not come ashore to look for the Grey Lion without a thick screen of archers and axemen around them. They trailed far behind Lannan's party, which consisted of Mursil, the huntmaster, smelling richly of fruity Zhang wine, the bushman, Hui, the prince and his two arms-bearers. The gods were as good as their promise that morning. The bushman led them around a bank of papyrus that thrust out into the plain like an accuser's finger, and as they turned the point of it, they came upon another bay of open grassland. It was a natural arena, fenced on three sides by the stands of dark reeds, a huge circular extent of lush grass, about half a mile across. Down the centre of this opening, lying at regular intervals, were six large dark objects, clearly visible on the open plain, but the range was too long for immediate identification. Mursil, the huntmaster, spoke quickly to the pygmy scout in a formless dialect. Hui made a note to study this language. It was the only spoken word in all the four kingdoms in which he was not fluent.
My lord, he says, they are dead buffalo killed by the Grey Lion.
Mursil translated on a warm wave of wine fumes.
Where is the beast? Lannan asked, and the bushman pointed. It is there, behind the second carcass. It has seen and heard us, and is lying hidden, Mursil explained.
Can he see it? Lannan demanded.
Yes, my lord. He can see the tips of its ears and its eyes. It's watching us.
At that distance? Lannan asked with disbelief, looking down at the bushman. I don't believe it.
It's true, my lord. He has the eyes of an eagle.
At your peril, if he is mistaken, Lannan warned.
At my peril, Mursil agreed readily, and Lannan turned to Hui. Make ready, my bird of the sun.
While they stripped Lannan of his armor, bound his loins in a cloth of linen, and set light hunting sandals on his feet, the rest of the party straggled up. Some of the older nobles were in litters. Asmund, looking frail and white-haired, stopped his bearers beside Lannan.
A clean kill, he wished the prince, like the one your father made.
And they carried him to where he could have a view of the field. The party spread out along the edge of the reed bank, their arms and armor glinting in the sunlight, their robes purple and white and red, spots of gay colour against the dark reed beds. A silence fell upon them as Lannan stepped forward and turned to face them. His body was naked but for the loincloth, and the skin was smooth and startlingly white, except where the sun had gilded his face and limbs. It was a beautiful body, tall and gracefully proportioned, heavy in the shoulder and narrow at waist and belly. His curls were bound with a purple headband, and his red-gold beard was clubbed and turned up against his throat. He looked at the waiting ranks before him. "I make claim to the city of Opet and all the four kingdoms," he said with simplicity, and his voice carried clearly to every one of them. Hui took his weapons to him. The shield, hide of the buffalo, shaped in a long oval, tall as a man and as wide as his shoulders. In its center were the eyes, a pair of fierce owl eyes painted in white and yellow. When these were exposed to a beast, they represented the natural aggressive stare which would usually trigger the charge of a predator.
"May this shield cover you well," Hui told him softly.
"Thank you, old friend." Next, Hui offered him the lion spear. This was such a heavy, cumbersome weapon that only a powerful man could handle it. The shaft was of carefully selected hardwood, fire-treated and bound with green leather, which had been allowed to dry and shrink upon it. It was as thick as Lannan's wrist, and twice as tall as he was. The unbarbed blade was in proportion wide and heavy, bound into the shaft with leather strips, the round point honed to a razor edge. It was designed to allow the maximum penetration into flesh, and once buried, to open a massive wound that would induce heavy bleeding.
"May this blade find the heart," Hui whispered, and then louder, "Roar for me, Grey Lion of Opet."
Lannan reached out and touched the priest's shoulder. He squeezed it briefly.
"Fly for me, bird of the sun," he said, and turned away.
With the shield on his back, careful not to show the eyes, Lannan walked out towards the waiting beast. He walked tall and proud in the sunlight, a king in all but name, and Hui's heart went with him. Quietly, Hui began to pray, hoping that the gods were still attentive. Lannan strode through the soft grass that brushed his knees. As he went, he remembered the advice of the oldest and best of his hunt masters, rehearsing each move, each word of it. "Wait until he growls before you show him the eyes. Make him come to you at an angle. He charges with head held low. You must open his chest from the side. The skull is like iron. The bones of the shoulder will turn the finest metal. There is one place only, the base of the neck between spine and shoulder." Then the words of the only man amongst them all who had ever faced the Grey Lion, Hamilcar Barker, the 46th Grey Lion of Opet. "Once the spear is in, hold it, my son. Cling to it with your life. For the Grey Lion is still alive, and that shaft is all that will keep him from you until he dies." Lannan walked on steadily, watching the black, swollen-bellied carcass of the buffalo, seeing no sign of the beast he was hunting.
"They're mistaken," he thought. "There's nothing here."
He could hear his own heart beating in the silence, his own footfalls, and the hiss and suck of his breath. He watched the dead buffalo and walked on, tucking the butt of the lion's spear more firmly under his right armpit.
"There is nothing here. The Grey Lion is gone," he thought.
And then, suddenly, he saw movement ahead of him. Just the flick of two ears, held erect for a moment, then flattened again. But he knew that it was there waiting for him. He felt his steps begin to drag, feet heavy with fear. but he forced himself onwards. "Fear is the destroyer," he thought, and tried to force it down. But it was a cold, heavy thing, like oil in his guts. He walked on, and suddenly the Gray Lion stood up beside the carcass of the buffalo. It stood facing him, with ears erect, its tail swinging lazily, head up, watching him. And Lannan gasped aloud. He'd not expected it to be so large. He missed a step, hesitating. It was huge, unbelievable, like something from a nightmare. He was 200 paces from it, and he walked on towards it, concealing the eyes, and watching the giant's cat's tail swish faster with agitation as he approached. 100 paces from it, and now the tail began to slash angrily like a whip against the Gray Lion's flanks. The cat crouched a little, the ears flattening against the skull. Lannan could see the eyes now, hot yellow eyes in the patent face mask. He walked on, and the Gray Lion's ruff of mane came erect, swelling out the shape of its head, and it sank a little lower into its crouch. Its tail slashed furiously, and Lannan walked on towards it. 50 paces separated them now, and the Gray Lion growled. It was the muttering menace of distant thunder, the drumming of the earth in quake, a belly-jarring sound like the crash of surf on a storm-swept beach. Lannan stopped. He could not walk on with that sound in his ears. He stood frozen, staring at this terrible animal in its mounting rage. Long seconds he hesitated, and then, with an abrupt movement born of fear, he swept the shield from his back and showed the eyes. The glaring roundels were all that was needed to precipitate the beast's anger. The black, tufted tail froze rigid, lifted slightly above the level of its back, the head dropped low against its chest, and it charged. At the same moment as the charge began, Lannan went up on his toes and jumped forward. The shackles of fear fell from his limbs, and he bounded towards the charging cat with long, light strides. He was angling his run across the Gray Lion's front, forcing it to keep turning towards him, bringing it in at an angle, exposing the neck and the side of the chest. As Lannan ran, the spear blade danced above the earth ahead of him like a firefly of light in the sun. The Gray Lion came fast and low, head down so that the incredible fangs almost touched its chest, curved and ivory pale. It seemed to snake against the grass as it closed for the kill, and its enormous bulk filled the whole of Lannan's vision. At the last possible instant, Lannan lifted the spear tip slightly, centering it on the vital spot at the base of the neck, and the Gray Lion came onto the spear with its whole weight driving it. The blade plunged into the brown, furry body, sucked into unresisting flesh, and the shock of the impact drove up the shaft and hurled Lannan backwards onto his knees. But he held on to the spear. A storm raged about him. Great waves of sound engulfed him, battering his eardrums, as the Gray Lion roared out its death throes. The shaft of the lion's spear whipped and thrashed in his grip, smashing against his ribs, crushing and bruising his flesh, shaking him so his teeth clashed together in his skull, lacerating his tongue. He clung to the spear. He was lifted up from his feet, riding high on the shaft of the spear as the Gray Lion reared, and then he was smashed down onto the earth again as the great cat plunged. He felt muscle and sinew tear in his arms and shoulders, felt the Gray Lion's claws raking the flimsy leather shield, felt weakness in his body and darkness in his head, but still the storm raged and shook him. Once more the Gray Lion roared and reared. Lannan felt himself hurled towards the heavens. The shaft of the lion spear snapped like a brittle twig,
and Lannan was thrown with the butt of it still in his hands. He flew for long seconds, bird free, and then earth thumped the breath from his lungs. Painfully, he dragged himself into a sitting position and looked around him, stunned, clutching the broken shaft of the spear to his chest. 10 paces away, the Grey Lion was crawling towards him through the grass. The broken hilt of the spear protruded from the exact spot in the neck where Lannan had aimed. The Grey Lion's throws had worked the blade mercilessly into his own flesh, opening a hideous wound from which the bright heart blood pumped. But the Grey Lion's yellow eyes were still upon him, and those great curved fangs gleamed for his flesh. Slowly it crawled towards him, its breath drumming in the mighty throat, dragging its paralyzed hindquarters, dying but still deadly. "Die, die," thought Lennon, watching it with fascination, crushed by the conflict, unable to move. "Die," he thought, "please die." And suddenly, the final spasm caught the giant cat. Its back arched, the legs stiffened, claws ripping into the earth, the mouth opened wide and pink, and it groaned. One last long, pitiful groan, and it died.